Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and this interview was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For the latest news and terms and conditions, go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and I'm here with Gareth King. How are you, Gareth?
I'm good, thank you, Chris.
Excellent, excellent. We were talking last week, but you're the viticulturist here at Felton Road, one of Central Otago's top, well, I think, top Pinot Noir producers.
Thank you very much.
In fact, my wife is a big fan of your Chardonnay, or she was last time we were here. It was very buttery, so the old... What's the chemical? Diacetyl. Is that the chemical you get for butter flavours in wines?
Well, it could be a number of factors, of course. It could also be the influence of the oak coming through it.
Yeah.
But hopefully as well as it's not too much exposure out there in the vineyard.
And, oh, okay.
And from a tannin point of view that... You know, you're starting to see some of those interesting flavours and sort of that butterscotch character, I suppose, you're coming through. And I think that was more of a winemaking style.
Yeah, malolactic fermentation.
Yeah, it's still there, and that's really just to look at the acidity. But, you know, I think if we think viticulturally wise from vines, I think it's vine health, you know. We've got to keep them as healthy as we can, and then perhaps less oak treatment. Coming through and perhaps less of winemaking and more letting the juice and the grapes express themselves.
Oh, don't tell me that. Jane loved that wine. She was very she's like, give me a bottle of that when you're there.
I think you'll find now that she'll be even in more favour of really where as the vine age has developed, the expression that's coming through with those more recently.
Okay. I want to talk a wee bit about trellising. Just to start off with, because I noticed you guys, it's VSP or vertical shoot positioning. Things going straight up.
Yeah, that's correct.
And then a lot of people have a choice, whether to do spurred pruning or cane pruning or all sorts of weird and wonderful things you see in different countries. What are you guys using here and why?
As you described, vertical shoot positioning. So it's cane pruned.
So that's taking a cane from the season before?
Previous season, that's right. And, coming from a head height of, 800 through to 900 millimetres from the ground, arcing that cane and twisting it along a permanent wire. From that, you've got buds spaced sort of every 80 millimetres, I suppose you could say. And then those individual buds will then break into a small shoot, which we then will train between two to three sets of foliage wires throughout the year.
Upwards.
Vertically, yeah. And yes, there is, there's techniques to say, well, look, once you've got the vine established like that, just go to a spur style, which would mean instead of laying a fresh cane every year, the cane is laid down and left in there as a permanent cordon,
and from piece of wood. Yeah, like a trunk, really,
like
isn't
a trunk,
it?
Exactly, just an extension of the trunk itself, and then from there you're then spurring, so a very short growth from the previous year. You're cutting it back to one, more likely two buds, mm-hmm. Including the basal bud, and from there those shoots are then growing vertically. There's two or three good points of each. Training system, I suppose you can say. Each of them have their own benefit. Talk a little bit about spur pruning to start with.
Yep.
You in theory you should find more uniformity, because as a cane grows throughout a growing season, you're going to have different things that have happened to those buds from the close to the head to the top to the middle, wherever they've been. So as you've laid that cane down, the next season you may find a wee bit more non-uniformity with that shoot growth.
I always think, this doesn't sound thing, but with a cane, I always think that the sap is rising, so the first bud's got the first grab of the sap, and then the next bud, and next time you get to the end, it's getting what's left.
No, it's almost it is like that at the start, but it's almost the opposite, where you get a lot of apial dominance at the very ends of the cane. And that you've got to remember, it's like pushing water to a hose. It always pours out the end, and that's quite often what ends up happening with the vines that are cane pruned, that end one or two shoots will go very, very quickly.
Okay.
Because that's where it's been plugged off, you can say. It's been terminated at that point, and those shoots will go and go very, very well. The upside and downside of both systems, it is people required. The best part about spur pruning is the fact that, you can use less people over the winter because, you're not needing to take longer to select the canes, to wrap them, tie them down, you know, remove out all the previous year's growth. With spur pruning, you can pretty much you just cut, and you may have run through a machine to be able to remove the previous year's canes out of that, to be able to what they call barrel pruning, to take that trash away, and you can do that via machine. So you can see quite quickly you can use less staff. The advantage that we really look at here with cane pruning is the fact that you need as many people in the winter as you do in the summer. So for us here at Felton Road, that means that we have more families employed throughout a 12-month period. So rather than having seasonal lifts in staff and falls in the winter and lifts again in the very peak of summer to be able to select out the canes and get them correct, because with more spurs, even if you lay less spurs, you have more work to do in the summer. So you have higher peaks at certain times to be able to get the canopy sorted. Whereas cane pruning, you're doing some of that selecting work in the winter months. And I think it's healthy. You know, we're an organic, biodynamic-based property with, you know, 70 hectares being farmed, of which 32 of those are under vines. You know, we're holding 7 to sometimes even as high as 8 full-time families are based here within the whole operation, from the vineyard, you know, through to the winery.
Yeah, and I suppose one of the problems is if you do have that high peak and trough of staff, especially in Central Otago, there's a lot of fruits and transient workers. It must be hard getting the staff for that chunks of work.
Yeah, it definitely is. So, you know, it's a strange technical reason to actually answer your question. that it's there are a lot of, you know, as I described with spur pruning and, you know, with cane pruning, the key thing you could probably say there is that, you know, in the spring they'll break bud a little bit earlier, mm-hmm. Which will mean that you'll even find that you're harvesting a fraction earlier. If you look at the tight nature of our growing season, I think that's quite important, that we don't want to be going too late in the autumn, you know, hoping that fruit's going to mature.
Because you get early frosts here, don't you?
Yeah, you can in the autumn, but at the same time we can get those frosts in the spring as well. But hopefully that's why you've chosen sites that are more free draining. You know, we're not on high frost risk. Mm-hmm. The cane pruning vines will, to use the expression, will get up and dance very quickly. Then they get away because they've got so much energy with, on each vine. They've only, you know, perhaps have only got 12 buds laid down. So, you know, with that big root system and things that's in place, they'll very quickly, you know, develop their shoots and get up and grow. So that's a healthy thing, because then they're photosynthesizing correctly and early, so that we're not seeing the sort of the yellows that can come in with a wee bit of cooler weather, which can happen in the spring, where you're not getting as good a photosynthetic activity from the sun. And all that's putting strain on those clusters. So cane pruning, you'll tend to find you'll have bigger clusters. You'll tend to find you've got more uniformity of year in, year out of yields. And at the end of the day, it's producing grapes, expressing a place is what we're trying to achieve here. And we have to do that year in, year out. It's important to make sure we've got the right amount of fruit coming through, that we're not overcropping anything and undercropping as well. Because we have had seasons where, you know, even if you're cane pruning, that we have seen lower crop set. And, you know, less production per vine doesn't necessarily mean better quality. You do reach a point where you get low enough where those factors of having less fruit, you just start seeing overripe characters and more of that jam character, I suppose you could say, that higher sweet notes that come through, which is more a climate-driven thing than, say, a site-driven thing.
Yep. I got a really tough question for you, because I don't really understand it, and I want someone to explain it. And as a viticulturalist, I'm hoping you're the man who will do it. One of the things about Central Otago and a lot of New Zealand is those high diurnals. That's the day temperature, night temperature differences. People always say that high diurnals give you higher acidity levels.
Wow, here we go.
Yeah.
You're opening a can of worms here.
Yeah, we are, because I don't understand it. I've got my theories, but I'm not confident I'm right. So my question is, in the last interview we were doing last week, you mentioned things about the acidity being consumed or used up. What's the process of acidification or deacidification as the grapes ripen? And how does the diurnals work? Is this a real toughie?
No, it's not a toughie. It's actually it's a question that it's pretty simple to answer. Obviously, you're here in the Southern Hemisphere, so. You know, as the further you move south, so the from a latitudinal point of view, we're just on the 45th parallel. Then, you know, as you move further and further away from the equator, you're going to get a greater diurnal, which is exactly what you've referred to.
The day-night temperature.
And being an island, as New Zealand is, and we're in the South Island of New Zealand, and we're three quarters of the way down the bottom of that South Island, we're exposed to, you know, regular weather events, and that's where our diurnal comes in as well. And that during the summer months, we're right in the middle of that island of the South Island, and in the lower two thirds of it. So when you come over the bridge this morning, there was a sign saying Bannockburn, the heart of the desert, and that's exactly the sort of semi-arid conditions that we're in, and that is the fact that we don't have the water in the soil on a continual basis, so that as the day temperature heats up, it can take the humidity out, which will moderate it. Or we don't have a water mass like an ocean mass or a large land mass that's around us to enable that to happen. So those diurnals can be quite critical. They can work in our favor, and I think that's actually where we get some of the very crisp and the perfect reflectiveness of a place from. But the downside is that if during that February period, so what I'm referring to there is during veraison, and that veraison is the colour change.
Yep, the grapes change colour. Yeah. February is the hot part of the season.
It can be. Now, if February, though, can be a cooler part of the season, then that's actually when you won't see the acidification coming down. So the important part that you've got to look for there is that we've got to make sure that from a reflectiveness or from a sun point of view, that the vine itself is not overheating. Because if it starts to overheat, it shuts down. So you have to make sure that the canopy that you've got isn't too thick, because then you're going to get shading. So if you have shading coming through, you're not going to have the heat coming onto the clusters, and the vine itself is also not going to be moderated. You know, it's going to have that cool effect coming through. The opposite to that is that if we tried to open up our canopies here, the further south we go too far, we'll get extremes of heat, and then the vine ends up shutting itself down. So it's not actually burning out that acidity that's taking place. It's just like a big sink. Okay, so all the energy that's in those leaves is then being transferred into the individual clusters. Mm-hmm. As those clusters are ripening and going through that that wonderful transition where they start to soften, and you start to see the colour, if it's Pinot Noir coming through as a red, or Chardonnay and Riesling, you're seeing that lovely goldening character coming through. That softening, that development of the tannins, so all those phenols and things that are starting to happen, that's when the juice is starting to obviously increase within the berry as well. And it's that high green grassy sort of very small hard berry that it was a few weeks earlier is now starting to dilute. You're starting to see the softening of that skin, the colouring of that skin. You're even seeing the ripening of those seeds. And all of that process, that maturation process that's taking place, is where the acidity will start to fall out. Now,
is the acidity being consumed, or is it being diluted?
It's probably a combination of both. Some of it will be being diluted, because obviously the berries are increasing out. But if you've got a particular juice that's got so much acid in it, it won't necessarily disappear. It's still there, even though you're increasing some of the juice volume. The majority of it you'll actually see is being consumed. And it's what you're seeing is you're seeing the total acidity moving a little bit with the malolactic as well as the tartaric coming through. And if you have those summers where it can be a little more cooler in that February period, then we'll see much higher malos. The malolactic portion of that will stay a lot higher coming through.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so how's it being consumed? Because one of the things I read about and probably got completely wrong was that during photosynthesis, the grapes create sugars, But in the during that process, they consume acidity, or I don't really understand it, to be honest.
Yeah, it is quite a, you know, at the end of the day, that's how a function of a vine works, and it can be quite complicated with the photosynthetic activity and the acidity, the falling out in it. I think the easiest way for people to understand it, though, is just think about the maturity that's taking place. And, you know, as the acidity is starting off in something that's very hard and very green, and as you're starting to mature that out into an individual berry, the metabolism is needed. You know, the photosynthetic activity is still quite high. You're still looking for that nutrient base, the sink, as I said before. You're looking at all the energy transfer that's in those leaves going down into that, into the individual clusters, you know, or the individual berries, even for that matter, with it at that stage. And part of that process is that that acidity that's there will need to metabolize, and that's part of that ripening process that takes place.
The metabolization is it part of the biological process of the ripening? One of the ways I used to think about it was that in places with high diurnals, because people talk about high diurnals, you hold on to your acidity. If it's cold at night, you don't tend to hold on to it. And I thought it was to do with respiration. So when the grape shuts down overnight because it's really cold, it's not respiring, so therefore it doesn't consume the acidity, whereas during the day it might consume a little bit of acidity. I'm completely confused about it.
Well, see, the part that we're going to be careful of too is that as a vine moves over that sort of 28 degrees, or the air temperature moves above 28 degrees, you get the same effect as it moves under 8 degrees or 10 degrees. The jury's still out, I suppose, on what is the perfect growing conditions. But, you know, as you get cooler, and that's really what we're referring to there, you know, with the diurnal cooling down in the evening. Then, you know, the vines won't be, you know, consuming. There won't be that metabolization. And it is respiring. The stomata are opening. It's all part of that chemical function to allow that to take place. But likewise, it can also occur in the very hot conditions as well, that if the vine isn't functioning properly, and this is where I get back to making sure that vines aren't struggling, you know, with canopy growth and health, and that all gets back to knowing that you've got the right shoot density correct for the vine age and for the vine itself. You've got some form of shading over the soil. Because if the earth itself is being kept cool, then the metabolism and the respiration of that vine is still taking shape. It's still taking up water. You know, you can have very hot days, and if the vine leaves are getting extremely hot, then they're shutting down. They're not respiring. So you might be giving them plenty of water, but if they haven't had sufficient earlier on in the growing season to build a good canopy, then they're not going to respire and actually allow that acidity to burn up. So that's why it's complicated, because it's not just a diurnal shift. It's all about how well a canopy has been growing throughout the season. It's also when that diurnal shift, or when that metabolism takes place. And as I said, it's around that. The key factor for us here in Central is what happens really through that period of veraison. And you know that it's not in that week before harvest that the acidity will fall. There is a subtle change there, but the greatest percentage of it will occur through that sort of fortnight that things are going through that rapid period of veraison.
And the other question that's sort of linked to it is, people always talk about grapes. They consume carbon dioxide and breathe oxygen, but that's during photosynthesis. Is the process is in reverse at nighttime, isn't it? It consumes oxygen and breathes out carbon dioxide when it's slowed down at night, when it's sleeping, if you like, because it's not generating any energy. It has to consume energy to stay alive.
Yeah, there's a little bit of that, but that's also, again, when the stomata and things are being shut down. And that can even happen, you know, on a very hot period during the day if it's to shut itself down. The volume that you're looking at and through that evening period, I don't think it's significant for what we would see here. The nice part that we would see here and further south where we've come is that, you know, 20 past 9 at night, the last of the sun is moving off the hill. And at 20 past 5 in the morning, the sun's back up again. So, with a full moon here, pretty much throughout the summer, you can be outside to midnight, and then, you know, 4 o'clock in the morning, it's daylight again.
All right, I don't think I fully understand. I can summarize what you said about the acidity, and I think I can almost understand. So, the key points are the veraison, that when the acidity drops, obviously, and it drops later on.
Yep, that's correct.
If it gets too hot or too cold, you won't get any metabolism of acidity, and that can be a function of vineyard density and layout and all sorts of things like that. And if it gets cold at night, it's not metabolizing as well, so therefore your acidity levels aren't going to drop at night time.
Yeah, and that's, I think, you know, without sort of going back over and repeating, trying to think some of the key factors that we want to look at, but I think you've hit it perfectly.
Yeah, it's a tough one. I know cold nights, warm days, you have fresh acidic wines compared to a place that's hot all year round, you know.
Yeah, and then, but again, we've got to get back to how the canopy and you know, and how well that's been set up. There's a number of factors that you can manipulate it, of course. People can be putting on a lot of water, or, you know, looking at using other ways of feeding a vine artificially or whatever, and you can manipulate some of these factors. When I think if you're really just trying to express a site and look for a place that we have here that, you know, Central Otago is quite unique. The soils are very unique. I think the climate in its own makes it quite interesting. So you put those factors all together, and yeah, acidity is our friend, really, because that's what we're also looking for longevity in those wines.
Okay. All right, Gareth, I think we'll let you go off and check your water pump.
we're probably having one of our driest ever seasons, Chris. The last time we've had this low level of rainfall for the previous 6 months was back in 1998.
Yeah.
So, at the moment, one of our vineyards that's close to the Karawa River, we're just needing to make sure we can fill a dam. When you're pumping water, you want to make sure that things are working the way you think they are.
Brilliant. All right then, Gary. Thank you very much.
Cheers, Chris.